Welcome to the Erectile Dysfunction Radio Podcast. This is the podcast dedicated to educating and empowering men to address erectile dysfunction, improve confidence, and enhance the satisfaction in their relationships. This podcast is brought to you by ErectionIQ.com. Learn more at ErectionIQ.com.
Welcome to the Erectile Dysfunction Radio Podcast. I am Mark Goldberg, certified sex therapist. I am deeply passionate about working with men like you to help resolve their ED.
We are here on the Erectile Dysfunction Radio Podcast once again. We are joined by Dr. Shai Krug. Dr. Krug is a psychologist and a certified sex therapist running a group practice in New York and New Jersey. In addition to his general therapy work, he helps people address and resolve the psychological barriers to better sexual function. Today, we want to lean on Dr. Krug's expertise to learn more about what it takes to develop a good, healthy mindset for better erections and better overall sexual function. Dr. Krug, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. It's great to see you again.
Great to see you too. So, Dr. Krug, to get us started, can you share with our listeners just a little bit about the importance of a good, healthy mindset when it comes to achieving and maintaining erections?
Sure. So I think the first thing that comes to mind is many people think about the genitals as the primary sex organ. The most important sex organ you have is your brain, right? This is the most important part of the sexual experience. A good percentage of any sexual experience is really happening in your brain. So I think the way that we think about sexuality, the way we think about relationships, the way we think about pleasure is really, it's not at all fundamentally rooted in the genitals themselves, but in how our brains work and how our minds operate. So I think we can create a system and a structure that is rooted in the mindset about how we think about sex and sexuality.
Okay. So what would you say is a good mindset for people to be aiming for? And what would be maybe an example of like a less helpful mindset when it comes to sexual performance?
Sure. So I like to think about this through the lens of a process versus an outcome, or through a journey versus a destination. And many people, when they think about sex and sexuality, are very focused on the outcome. They're very focused on what is the conclusion of a sexual encounter, and they end up losing contact with what is the journey, what is the process that we are engaging in. And one of the metaphors I like to rely on, Steven Snyder, I wrote a book called Love Worth Making. He's a psychiatrist and sex therapist in Manhattan. And one of the metaphors that he uses is the metaphor of a meal. And if you go to a really nice restaurant and you're really focused on the main course, then anything else that happens around that main course kind of feels almost secondary. Like it's not quite as important as the real reason you're there. You're there for the steak. You're there for like the main course. But perhaps a better metaphor is that the process, the journey in sex, is the appetizer, the main course, and dessert, and the outcome of sex, let's say orgasm or ejaculation, is kind of the icing on the cake at dessert. It's a nice way to conclude the meal, but it's not the reason you're having the meal. So I think one of the big emphases that I bring into this process is a shift from outcome-focused sex to process or pleasure-focused sex that is not fundamentally rooted in how sex ends, but rooted in enjoying the process, enjoying the journey.
That's a really, really helpful distinction. I really like the way that you like differentiate between like the process and the outcomes. And to me, it sounds like outcomes are a lot of performance-driven focus, and the process is much more of like a pleasure-driven focus.
Absolutely. It's being tuned into your body versus tuned into your thoughts about the future. Right. So if someone is engaging in any meaningful activity in the present, but they're thinking about what's going to happen later, you kind of lose contact with what's happening in the moment.
Yeah. So to that end, Dr. Krug, in your experience, how does stress and anxiety impact erectile function? And how can a positive, helpful mindset help to counteract some of these effects?
Sure. A great question. I think that in particular, how the mental health industry has evolved over the past several decades has been much more of an emphasis on the mind-body connection. Not that we are simply a product of emotions or a product of thoughts, but there's really a relationship between how our mind and how our body communicates. And one of the things that I often bring up when I meet with men who are navigating either difficulty getting erections or maintaining an erection are some of the underlying processes involved in how our central nervous system and peripheral nervous system works. So the a little quick crash course in the nervous system. So our central nervous system is our brain and spinal cord, and our peripheral nervous system are all the nerves that innervate the rest of our body. And that peripheral nervous system has a somatic branch, which is conscious, the ability to consciously move, and your brain communicates to your body and your body does something. That's the somatic nervous system. And then there's the autonomic nervous system. Those are all the systems and processes that happen automatically. Breathing, blinking, your heart beating, your movement of your digestive tract, dilation and constriction of arteries and veins. And that autonomic branch of the nervous system has two systems involved. There's what's called the fight or flight response, or the sympathetic nervous system, and what's called the rest and digest system, also referred to as the parasympathetic nervous system. Both of those systems are active during the sexual response cycle, but at different times. And if there's too much sympathetic nervous system activation, that would be that fight or flight response, you can actually suppress the sexual response cycle. And a metaphor that an anecdote that I like to use to describe this process is, imagine you're out on a romantic date with your spouse or partner, and you're feeling, excited to be with the other person. Maybe you're even feeling sexually excited or sexually aroused. And then out of the blue, a grizzly bear starts to chase you down the street, and you're now running for your life, and your heart is racing, and you're breathing heavily, and you're sweating, and your muscles are tense. Your ability to get an erection goes out the window. When your body is in this state of physiological activation, the sexual response cycle is no longer interested in becoming engaged. And because so much of the experience of anxiety and stress happens in our minds, right? Fundamentally, the experience of anxiety is one that is rooted in the future. You're thinking about what's going to happen next week, next month, next year, etc. We get hooked into our thoughts, hooked into our mind, and our body can actually respond as if we are currently in threat, even if we're not. So there's really this bi-directional relationship between how our mind impacts our body and how our bodies impact our mind that can start this negative feedback loop that can shut down the sexual response cycle.
Yeah. So to that end, I guess the follow-up question, are there specific techniques or exercises that can help a person develop, let's say, a more positive mindset that could lead to better outcomes and could counter some of that stress or anxiety process?
Sure. So better mindset really, I think, can relate to a number of different points. One of which I think is, are we able to be present where we are? So if you have an individual who's engaging in some form of sexual activity, or an individual, if it's solo sexual activity, which is what masturbation is, but if someone is engaging in some sexual activity and they are not present with their body or present with their partner's body in that experience, are you really there? Right. So if you're hooked into a thought in the past or a painful emotion or a painful memory, or you're thinking about something that's going to happen next week or next month, you're no longer really present. And if you're not present, how can you really participate in a meaningful way in what's happening in the present? So I talk about mindfulness on a pretty consistent basis, that mindfulness, I would say, is the biggest and most powerful keystone in rewarding sex. That even if, let's say, a man is unable to get or maintain an erection, but is really present with his partner, and if it means exploring what is pleasurable touch, if it's tuning into the relationship itself, if it's bringing pleasure to a sexual partner, whatever it may be, even in the absence of an erection, sex can still be rewarding and fun and playful and exploratory, but only if it's rooted in being present and being mindful. So I regularly utilize this skill of mindfulness. Among the ones that I find to be particularly beneficial is using your body as your mindfulness tool. And your body, as your sense of touch, is such a powerful mechanism that we use to connect to our environments, that tuning in to what is sensorily, or from a tactile perspective, what is pleasurable, that could be focusing on sensations of pressure, sensations of warmth or coolness, or sensations of different textures. By tuning into our bodies, by tuning in a very mindful way, we can experience fulfillment in how we connect in a sexual encounter with another person.
Dr. Crew, do you have an anecdotal story that you could share, obviously protecting patient confidentiality, where you have seen a patient who came in with, let's say, an erection challenge, either gaining or maintaining, and were able to successfully implement this, both in terms of doing these exercises outside of a sexual situation, but also being able to successfully apply it over time and see a sustained improvement?
Absolutely. So this is probably a case that I've seen with many different patients. Are patients who find themselves ruminating, They have thoughts, they get hooked into their thoughts, and they get into this almost like a tug of war with their thoughts, and they're grappling and struggling back and forth. That a man who's able to get an erection, and during the course of sexual activity, whatever form of sexual activity it might be, a thought creeps into his mind. The thought, what if I lose my erection? And as that thought creeps into the mind, especially if he gets hooked or consumed or caught in that thought, he becomes less and less present in that sexual encounter, and losing an erection becomes more likely. And so first of all, learning to step back from that potential feared outcome and instead reconnecting to the process that a couple is participating in, or an individual may be participating in, that you can give your body the room to get an erection back. This is also rooted, there's a nice exercise that I often recommend called soft genital stimulation. There are also those who refer to it as get it, lose it, get it, which is it's an exercise that is a sensory-based exercise that is geared in learning to get and to, you're getting an erection, then letting it go away, and then letting it come back, and then letting it go away again. And you're basically training your mind and body to notice a couple of things. One is, even if you lose an erection, it can come back. So there's a little bit of cognitive restructuring there where we're going to challenge some potentially unhelpful or maladaptive thoughts that men might have, that if I lose my erection, sex is over. Well, you could think that, or you can lose an erection and say, hey, if I tune back into my experience of pleasure, maybe that erection decides to come back. But it's also just strengthening the arterial and venous process, right? Getting an erection is your arteries carrying blood into the penis, and it's preventing blood flow from going out. It's called arterial dilation and venous occlusion. That's the process that causes an erection. That you're strengthening that process through this process of getting and practicing getting and losing an erection. So through these acts of mindfulness and through the training in the mind and body of practicing getting an erection, men build up the skill of being able to recenter themselves. That if you're in a sexual encounter, man loses an erection, instead of saying, all right, I guess we're done, I guess this is over, saying, let's pivot back to what is pleasurable, either from a sensory perspective, from a mental or cognitive perspective, what is erotic, what taps into the arousal template for the individual, and giving the body the opportunity to go back to what the body knows how to do, right? The body knows how to get an erection, letting the body go back to that place of allowing the erection to come back if and when it's ready.
Okay, that's super, super helpful. So Dr. Krug, when you talk about mindfulness, so a lot of that is experiential in nature. Obviously, our minds are always activated, but in the mindfulness exercise, it's about bringing somebody into the present. What I'm wondering about is there a role or a place for working on or developing a erection mindset, let's say, around confidence? Right? That's something that people are working on, not necessarily in that sexual moment, not necessarily about staying present, but about countering, some of their unhelpful, beliefs about themselves, their, concerns about performance. Are there things that people can be doing to help, cultivate a more confident mindset leading to better encounters?
That's a really great question. And I think I would like to draw some distinctions between confidence as a mindset versus confidence as an action. So I think I'm not super well versed in etymology, but I believe the word confidence comes from the Latin con, which means with, and fidi, which comes from the word fidelity. Don't hold me to that, but I believe I have read that, but I don't want to, misrepresent what the etymology of that word is. But I think in many cases, confidence is actually less of a feeling and more rooted or more connected to an act of doing. For example, I would imagine that if we had two individuals, one who was, let's say, both are supposed to give a public a speech of some sort, and one of them feels terrified, but still gets on stage and does it. The other feels super confident in himself, but last minute he backs out. If I were to ask which one of those two people had confidence, I would imagine many might say the person who did the thing, even if he was scared. So I think in many ways, confidence is less of just an emotional experience and rooted more in what are the actions you are taking that are consistent with what your values are. And on that note, I would wonder, is it confidence that is it a feeling of being confident that is more relevant to creating sustainable, meaningful, rewarding sexual relationships? Or is it the act of turning towards, moving in, engaging with the values that make sex rewarding? So on some levels, I would think that there's maybe less of an emphasis or less of a pressure on getting someone to feel a certain way, and instead facilitating a process through which men can connect to their sexual selves and connect to their partners in a way that's rewarding and fulfilling. But that being said, I think there are certainly circumstances where someone might feel a certain way and therefore, as a result, not engage in those choices. So in that sense, that feeling becomes very consequential in how a person interacts with a sexual partner and in how a person feels about their own bodies or about their own sexual function. I think one of the valuable tools that I like to bring in, and it's oftentimes rooted and connected to mindfulness, is the ability to become an observer of our internal experiences. Right? You kind of touched on this a few moments ago, but our minds are thinking machines. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, your mind is churning out thoughts. Even when you're sleeping, that's what a dream is. Right? Your mind is constantly active, constantly churning out thoughts. And there are times that certain thoughts come into our mind that we latch onto. Oh, this thought is real. This thought is accurate. And then other times, thoughts come into our mind that we say, oh, that thought is silly. That thought is stupid. I can ignore that thought. But all of these thoughts are just thoughts. And one of the ways we can change how we interact with our thoughts is almost to take a step out to become an observer of our thoughts, to become aware that our mind is telling us a very compelling story, but a story nonetheless. Almost like the difference between being in a high-speed car chase and watching a high-speed car chase on a movie screen. You're seeing the same content, right? Visually, your brain is internalizing the images in the same way. But in one case, you don't have the reaction of fear. And in one case, you do. Because in the case where you're in the movie theater, you're aware that you're simply observing a story versus I am in the story. So if a man has thoughts, for example, like I'm going to lose my erection, if he were to get in that thought, right, you'd be like wrapped up in or consumed by that thought, it now kind of becomes the reality versus my mind is telling me this story. My mind is telling me a narrative that this thing is going to happen, but it's a thought. Can I just notice that it's there? This is actually a process that we use in acceptance and commitment therapy, or ACT for short, called cognitive defusion. It's our ability to separate ourselves from our thoughts to allow ourselves to be increasingly flexible in response to these thoughts and not be, let's say, bowled over or consumed by them.
Yeah, it's an incredibly powerful skill set for people to develop. And I think that recognition that not all of our thoughts are real. I think we have a bias towards our own brains, that the things our brains tell us seem very real. Like we have a trusting relationship with our own brains. But I think that ability to kind of step back is super powerful. So in that process, do you see there as a role of selecting one's narrative? In other words, do people get a choice once they pull back and realize that their thoughts are really just a function of what the brain does? And some of these thoughts, we can choose to diffuse the intensity around them or the emotionality that we attribute to them. And others, I may not come with a lot of emotion packed in there, but maybe over time we could infuse them with more meaning. In other words, is there a way that a person can develop a new narrative or develop a different narrative that really takes hold, right? Or is all thoughts just kind of viewed as being equal?
Sure. I think that the short answer to that question is, what are your values? And if we choose to connect ourselves to thoughts or experiences that are consistent with the direction we want our life to be moving in, those thoughts and experiences are likely to enhance our journey moving towards those outcomes. So I think we can, to some degree, define for ourselves, what are the thoughts I want to attach myself to? But to your point, all of these are thoughts. But because our interactions with the world around us are rooted in which of these thoughts do we define as our reality, right? You know, like, I could have the thought that I'm sitting on a chair right now, and I say I am sitting on a chair, but it really is also just a thought, but it's how I'm interacting with my environment. It's how I make sense of my environment. I get to choose which thoughts I really want to align myself with. Right? So for example, someone might have the thought, my partner loves me. Now, we could defuse from that thought. We could disconnect ourselves from that thought and say, hey, that's just a thought you're having. Just because you think that doesn't make that real. But the person might say, but I like having that thought. That thought makes me feel connected to my partner. If I feel like if I have the thought that they love me and the thought that I love them. So a person might say, I experience a certain sense of enrichment in my life by attaching myself to that thought. So what I often use as the guide behind how we navigate this process is not whether or not a thought is good or bad, or whether a thought is accurate or inaccurate, but whether a thought is helpful or if a thought is unhelpful. A helpful thought is one that is likely to enhance your experience. Unhelpful thoughts are one that are more likely to pull you away from what's important to you. But by reorienting ourselves to what our values are and saying, what is it? What are the underlying values that matter to me? What would bring me a sense of fulfillment, a sense of reward, a sense of purpose? By identifying those values, we can then align our thoughts with what brings us towards those values. And that is often the compass that I would rely on to indicate which of these thoughts are helpful to hold on to and which ones are ones that are more helpful to allow ourselves to defuse from.
Yeah, that is a really, really helpful distinction between like is this thought helping me? Is this thought, you know, harming me? Does it serve to enhance my experience or not? And I think that recognition that, again, not all thoughts are equal, also in the sense that some of them go down to like a belief system, right? Mm-hmm. Our values, like things that are a lot more to our core. And when we are able to align like the thoughts that we are infusing meaning into with the things that we value in a positive way, that helps. It sounds to me like, Dr. Krieger, saying that people do have the capacity and the capability of shaping their own mindset over time. Like it's not an overnight trick, but through like doing that work over time, they can kind of realign which thoughts become the predominant narrative or the predominant story in how they're viewing any situation. But in our case, in particular around sexual activity, sexual performance, somebody could shift over time from a performance-based approach to much more of a pleasure-driven approach.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that I might bring into this is, what are your values in sex? Right. So when I sit down with an individual or a couple and I ask them about their sexual values, what makes sex meaningful for you? What makes sex rewarding for you? The most common answers I get are things like, it feels good. It's a form of connection. It's a form of exploration. It's a form of communication. It's an expression of love. I've almost never heard an individual or couple respond with specific sexual function making sex rewarding, right? So I've never heard someone say, the value that makes sex rewarding is an erection. Well, it's really, an erection is what allows other values to become engaged. So if there are values here you're trying to embody, one of the questions I'll sometimes ask men who are struggling with ED is, are there ways to engage the value even in the absence of an erection? That if you were to say that sex is the values that make sex rewarding are the sense of connection, the sense of playfulness, and the sense of pleasure. Let's say those are the three values that are the most important. Well, are there ways to connect even without an erection? Are there ways to experience pleasure or playfulness even in the absence of an erection? If the answer to that question is yes, well, can you embody those values even if you don't have an erection and let your body get the erection if and when it's ready to? And maybe that night's not the night for you to get an erection. Maybe you had a really stressful day at work, or maybe, you know, you didn't sleep well the night before, or you had too much alcohol. Maybe your body's not interested in an erection at that point. But are there other ways to connect to the values that make this encounter rewarding for you?
Yeah, that is super powerful. I couldn't have said it better myself. I mean, it's really just such a powerful message. And I think if I'm understanding you correctly, there certainly are ways of developing a new mindset around erections, especially if it has been mired in performance anxiety, fears, worries, and concerns. And it sounds like one of the ways to do that is for people to take a real inventory about like what they value, what they're really, you know, trying to get out of a sexual experience. And by connecting in with those values, what it could serve to do is highlight or even infuse more meaning and more focus on the group of thoughts that are much more associated with those values than may have been there in the first place.
Absolutely.
Okay. Dr. Krieger, this has been super helpful and super informative. Thank you once again for joining us. I will be inviting you back on because I think your expertise just helps to highlight just the role of the mind in the sexual process and in the erection process. And I think it's tremendous value for our listeners. So thank you very much for your time, and I look forward to hosting you in a future episode.
Thanks so much for having me. This was really great.
Thanks for listening to the Erectile Dysfunction Radio Podcast. For more information on today's topic and understanding how the mind impacts erectile dysfunction, please visit erectioniq.com. That's erectioniq.com.